So if I heard correctly, you've got a solo project that you're actually focusing on.
Million Miler. That one's actually my, because that's my first solo project that I've done. And, you know, ever since being in the T's and everything. So.
Okay, right on.
That one's just me. It's like an 80s themed solo project.
Well, I mean, hey, perfect timing. I feel like that's like the wave right now, which is awesome.
Totally. I almost feel like I'm late. You know, it's like I've been working on it for so long and it's now everything's kind of hitting and it's like, shit, I missed it. You know, I should have been putting this stuff out a year ago.
So I actually had a professor in college that predicted this wave back in 2015.
Oh, really?
He was obsessed with music and ended up becoming like an entrepreneurship professor. And long story short, I was sitting down with him. My thesis was on technology's influence on music. And he goes, oh, yeah, I think we're going to see like a synth wave revival or like 80s soundscape revival in like 5 years. Like, what makes you say that? And he was like, oh, a bunch of companies are buying up like old 70s hardware. And there's just this trend of hardware. And I think that's going to, you know, eventually feed its way into the mainstream.
Wow.
And at the time, I was like, that seems like a long shot. I don't know. And then here we are. And I was like, oh, wow.
That's cool. Yeah, that's interesting that that's how he got from point A to point B, because people were buying like 70s software. You know, that's wild.
Hey everyone, welcome to Made for Music. I am your host, Duncan Byerjean. The reason I started this podcast was growing up, music was my ultimate passion, but I didn't know how to get started. So this podcast seeks to depict a comprehensive view of the music world from the artistry to the business, so you can discover the resources available to you, and most importantly, the stories behind the people making things happen. If you dig what you hear, please rate and subscribe to Made for Music on Spotify, Apple Podcasts, or whatever your preferred podcast medium is. I truly appreciate that extra effort. And without further ado, here is the next episode of Made for Music.
Well, welcome to Made for Music. Today's friend of the podcast is a great one, hailing from the greater Chicago area. He and his band made their way from the underground scene to the top of the Billboard charts, garnering 3 top 40 hits and 2 Grammy noms along the way. Not many people can say that they're able to sustain a career spanning nearly 2 decades in music, and it's still rolling. In 2017, he founded Humans Were Here, a Chicago-based independent label with the mission of empowering artists to make their mark. Please welcome an orchestrator of hits throughout the 2000s and 2010s, with more on the way, multi-platinum singer-songwrider, frontman of the Plain White Tees, drummer of punk rock outfit TLB, an emerging solo artist known as Million Miler, Tom Higginson.
Hey, wow, that was a great intro, man. I love that. Thank you.
You made it easy for me. I mean, it's like anywhere I look, there's great stuff.
I forgot about half that stuff you said. That's nice.
You're like so focused on the now that...
Exactly. Yeah, totally. But well, I mean, aren't we all kind of? It's funny. It's like a, I don't know about you, but there's like a fine line between being super nostalgic and being like super like pointed towards the future, you know? And I feel like kind of riding that line is where I've found a lot of my creativity and a lot of my inspiration. You know, you got to think back about the past. You got to include that, but definitely always trying to do something new and something fresh.
For sure. And it's really interesting because we were just talking about Million Miler and kind of this resurgence of like the 80s synth wave and stuff. So I guess what made you dive back into it?
So yeah, so for people that don't know, I just launched a solo project. My first solo project I've ever done, you know, basically my whole life, because I've been doing Plain White Tees for, like you said, about 20 years now. In the last Plain White Tees album we made, we tapped into the kind of a synth vibe a little bit, but we didn't really go too far with it. And I was just kind of like, man, like, I love 80s music and I love the vibe of this. Like I was just saying, that nostalgic feel that it just instantly, you hear some of those synth sounds and it's just instantly such a vibe. It takes you back, you know? And so I just was like, man, I need to make a full record like this. I need to just have a project that is just all in on the synth stuff and that nostalgia. So yeah, so I started Million Miler, put out a few singles, and then dropped a full-length album, which is up, of course, on Spotify, but also available on vinyl and cassette tape, of course, because I gotta stick to my 80s roots there. So yeah, man, I'm just super excited about that. I actually got a couple music videos about to drop and actually some brand new music too. So I've just been, I don't know about you or like other creative people, but yeah, just like, I don't know, with all this time we've had, I've just been writing and just trying to be as creative as possible. It's been really, you know, of course, I don't want to say it's been nice because it's obviously been a wild, tumultuous year and a half or 2 years, but nice in the fact that I've had plenty of time to just be creative and, you know, not really have too much FOMO. You know, it's like just kind of chilling at home and just doing my thing. It's been cool.
Not missing out on anything. No one's hitting you up for plans that you have to say no to.
Yeah, exactly. Yeah. You don't feel bad about just staying home and, you know, writing music all the time. It's cool.
So what's interesting about that too, is you mentioned this love for the 80s. You've also got like this punk rock outfit. And when I think of basement shows and in those DIY tours and such. So before we, I guess, dive into all that, do you mind walking me through like what role music played in your early life? Maybe even before you joined into bands and.
Yeah. Why am I so obsessed with the 70s and 80s? I don't know. Okay. So my musical spectrum, I guess, is that what you're asking? Like, where did, like when I was a kid, basically in my house, my mom would always be playing like Michael Jackson and Pat Benatar on vinyl, you know, but then on the other, funny enough, on the other end of that spectrum, my dad was into like more of like the 80s, like pop metal. So like bands like Helloween, Manowar, Scorpions, stuff like that. Which was also super catchy and super pop, you know, but just in a different way. So that's, I kind of feel like that's where, I don't know, I feel like I've got a good pop sensibility. And also, like we said, I always been trying to think, keeping things fresh, never doing the same thing twice, always kind of pushing the envelope a little bit as much as I can. And I'll bet you that comes from like the 80s metal vibes from my dad. And then I started like when it was my own music, you know, my own musical tastes, I really loved the Monkees because that show was on like Nickelodeon, you know, their TV show when I was a kid. So like, I remember the first tape I ever asked my mom to like get me, you know, when we were at Kmart or something in the 80s was like the Monkees. And then I started, you know, buying all their albums on cassette tape and rocking out to them. Then I loved the Beach Boys. That was, I think, one of the first CDs I ever bought was like a Beach Boys greatest hits. So I was really loving that oldies, you know, and Plain White Tees, honestly, when we started, especially, even the reason we're called ourselves Plain White Tees is because of it kind of harkened back to like the 50s. You know, you think of like greasers and like leather jacket and the plain white tee on underneath, you know, because yeah, our early music especially was very, very much just like kind of like songs that sounded like they could have been from the 50s and 60s. And then we heard bands like the Ramones and, you know, the Smoking Popes and even Green Day and Weezer. And it was like, oh, these guys are kind of just doing this oldies thing too, but just like cranking up the distortion, you know?
Right.
And so that's where I think my love of punk rock comes from, is that it kind of just is that classic songwriting, you know, that like the same thing we were hearing with Buddy Holly and stuff like that in the 50s, just like with a little bit of edge to it, you know? Mm-hmm. So yeah, so I don't know, does that kind of explain? And then of course, totally. When I got into high school, it was all like, you know, Pearl Jam, Nirvana, you know, like I said, Green Day, Weezer, it was like this alternative scene. And then from that point on, it was just like, there was no going back. It was like, cool. I can kind of find my own little lane here with all of this great music that I love and find a way to like make it my own. And that kind of became Plain White Tees. And then when Plain White Tees, you know, we had, it seems like what really connected for us were those acoustic love songs. Of course, you know, Hey There, Delilah, 1, 2, 3, 4, Rhythm of Love, those are our three biggest songs. And they all definitely are, you know, kind of sewn by the same thread, you know? So to kind of fill that, those other vibes or those other loves of mine for music, the punk rock side, that, you know, just kind of pop 80s vibe. That's why I have these solo project in Million Miler and then the side project where I'm the drummer of TLB. And of course I write a lot of the songs, or, you know, I write my own songs for Million Miler. And then with TLB, me and the other guys just kind of jam out some fun songs. So It's very, artistically, it's really fun, really fulfilling for me to be able to kind of have these different outlets. I don't know. Is that kind of catch from start to finish, I think.
Oh, yeah, that was beautiful. And I think it really paves the way for our discussions about all your current projects at the moment, because it really reflects your sonic evolution. What's interesting is you talked about the punk rock scene really helping you find that sound. And you were on Fearless Records, which in my mind was like the pinnacle, like punk rock, pop punk kind of thing. And y'all are really ingrained in that scene. Of course, it is a more independent approach.
Yeah.
Hey There, Delilah comes out with Fearless. And I'm really curious as to what that process looks like, because it really starts to take off after y'all move to Hollywood Records. And I was wondering, was that part of the deal? Was Hollywood then promoting it? Because you released, you know, alternative versions under Hollywood. And the backing can just be so messy with this stuff. So I'm just curious as to what it looks like navigating really a song that becomes an evergreen hit, not even just, you know, number one of its time.
We had one record on Fearless, which was called Stop, which we made on our own. And then Fearless like picked us up and like just put out the album that we had already made. And that album had a song called Lonely September on it, which was an acoustic love song. You know, it was kind of like the precursor to Delilah. And that song was like, even to this day, I think on our Spotify, it's like one of our top 10 songs. Like people are still listening to it and still connecting with it. And so then we recorded our next album on Fearless, and we had that acoustic love song. It's like, oh, you know, it's like, I don't know, when I was a kid, bands that I loved, like I was listing earlier, Pearl Jam, Nirvana, Weezer, it's like they would always kind of have that one really chill song on the album, like at the end of it or something. So we always loved that and always wanted to do that. And so Hey There, Delilah was just that song for that next album on Fearless. All That We Needed was the name of the album that Hey There, Delilah first came out on. It was literally, that was all it was. It was like, oh, the acoustic song on this new album we made. So the album ended up selling like 80,000 copies or something like that. And, you know, Fearless was able, we made a video for Hey There, Delilah, because fans were like, they're the ones that told us that this was good, or that this was like a hit. You know, it wasn't, we knew it was cool, but like, we thought like, I don't know, that doesn't sound like a hit. You know, it doesn't sound like that would be on the radio or something. So it was really the fans that propelled that song. So we did like a little poll on MySpace, like, oh, what song off the album do you want to see us make our next video for? And it was like 98% Hey There, Delilah. So we're like, oh, okay.
Wow.
Yeah. So then we recorded the video, and Fearless was able to push it a little bit. You know, they got us some college radio play. They got us on like MTVU and, you know, just little things like that. We actually won the MTVU Woody Award for like, I forget what it was for, best love song or video, something like that. And it was really because of the success. Like I said, we sold 80,000 copies of that album. And so that's what led us to like major labels kind of whining and dining us and, you know, negotiating with Fearless to try to like, you know, I guess upstream us or whatever, you know? So we ended up signing with Hollywood Records, and we made a record with Hollywood, that didn't have Hey There, Delilah on it. We were moving on and going on to our next album. And so we had a song called Hate on that album, which did really well at alternative radio. And again, I think because of the groundwork, we had been touring forever. We just sold 80,000 copies. Like Delilah was kind of like a little underground hit, you know, like people on MySpace, online, it was like people knew that song. People were sharing that song. It was kind of like went viral before that was even a thing. You know, it was like people were talking about the song on a very grassroots level and sharing it and really feeling attached to it. And because of that, I think radio programmers and stuff, like they knew who Play My Tees were because of that song, even though it was never on the radio. So they played Hate, and Hate did really well. It charted in the top 20 on alternative radio. And the way the story goes, basically the president of the label, Bob Cavallo, who is a major, awesome player in the music industry in the last 50 years. I mean, he discovered the Love and Spoonfuls back in the day. He was he was Prince's manager, Alanis Morissette's manager. I want to say maybe Green Day at some point, but he was just one of those guys, very influential. And he was at this time moonlight of his career. Mm-hmm. He was the head of Hollywood Records. And so he came out to a show. We played in LA, and this is when Hate is peaking in the top 20 on the radio. President of label comes out to see his band, the success story that's, in the making. And we play Hate, and the crowd is loving it. It's an awesome moment. Cool. He's standing back there all proud. And then we played Hey There, Delilah. And the entire crowd is like shouting along every single word. And he turns to the A&R guy and he says, "What song is this? What the hell is this song?" And the A&R guy, luckily, was smart enough when we did the deal with Fearless to get access, in case they wanted to re-release some songs of a few of those songs off our last album, Hey There, Delilah being one of them. So Hollywood had the rights to, to put that out if they wanted to. So then the label came to us and said, "We want to make Hey There, Delilah the next single." And our first response was, "What? That's an old song. That song's already out, 80,000 people already know that song and have that song."
Right.
So our first response was pushback. But it only took, a little bit of time to think, well, it seems like everybody that hears this song really likes it. If we were able to sell 80,000 with Fearless, with practically no promotion, maybe we could sell a lot more with Hollywood. So we're like, screw it, let's go. Thankfully we made the right decision because obviously that song blew up, but really it was the buildup of it was another reason why it was so easy at radio. Because like I said, it was already pre-tested almost, it was already this hit that people loved. It just hadn't gotten that, that mainstream push. So yeah. So the label knew it was a hit because they saw the crowd. Like I said, a lot of radio promoters and program directors already knew who we were because of that song. So then they played Hate, that did well. So it was just an easy transition to go to Hey There, Delilah.
That's really fascinating because I think what a lot of maybe folks starting out aren't aware of is the fact that radio programs pretty stringent. So the fact that they already knew the song, you mentioned it wasn't getting played, but once that push came through, I'm assuming Hollywood Records was in charge of the radio promo then.
Yeah.
That's really fascinating. And I guess from your perspective, what does that start to look like from your day to day? You've essentially re-released or released to radio. And as a band, how immediate is the shift? Because during that time, this wasn't the streaming era where it's like it pops for a couple weeks and then, the next releases are out. It wasn't so much a volume game.
It definitely boomed. We were on a constant, a slow and steady path to success, I guess, very slow. Mm-hmm. But yeah, every tour we would do, it would be like the crowds would get a little bit bigger, or more and more people would be singing along or whatever, And then, like I said, when Hate got on the radio, we saw it. Oh, okay. This is really feeling good. There's some real momentum happening here. And then when Delilah went to radio, it was literally like 30% to 100%, or, if that makes any sense, it really skyrocketed. For sure. Like we were playing shows and there was, still to this day, obviously, because of thanks to that song. But back then it was like, we could maybe bring 400 people or 500 people to a show. And all of a sudden we were playing and there was like 10,000 people, like we played Milwaukee Summerfest, first shows where it was like, holy shit, man. Like, what are all these people doing here? Like, how is this possible? Right. It was wild. Yeah. And I will say that summer, we were so used to just living in the van, paying ourselves next to nothing just to survive every day. And you'd think that that was like the hard part, but man, having that hit, I don't know. I don't know that I don't want to say, I don't want to call out every other human being, but it was the craziest, most hardworking, non-sleeping, having to be on, having to sound like absolute shit on the radio because you just can't sing because you slept for 2 hours and on a plane. And I mean, it was like nonstop for, you know, that 3 or 4 months where the song was climbing, and then finally hitting number one. We didn't enjoy at the time the success of the song because we didn't even sit there and listen to ourselves on the radio and think like, oh my God, you guys, we made it. It was just nonstop. And then throw in, you know, Jay Leno and Conan, and you know, it's like all of these things, TRL, and it's like, these are amazing things. But it was just all, it was like, imagine every dream you've ever had and like cram them all into like a 3 month span and just go, you know, that's kind of what it was. So I'm not complaining at all. It was the most amazing time, but man, it's just, it was like way more work than I think anybody would ever imagine, including us. And we were, you know, doing all the work leading up to it, and still, it was like, holy shit, man, this is rough. Like,
yeah,
you think it's like, you know, it gets easier as you have these hits, but it's like kind of the opposite.
Totally. And a lot of that comes with the promo, all the doors open, and then the expectation, because again, it being like the music business, if you will, the business folks are like, take every opportunity, you're in the door.
Absolutely. Yeah.
You kind of alluded to it with like, hey, everything hits at once. Do you mind maybe juxtaposing what before that climbs the charts? You mentioned you're in the van. What does that pre-radio hit look like? And then what does the day-to-day schedule look like after, as far as responsibilities from the band? Because like you mentioned, it was...
Yeah. So before Hollywood Records, we basically would play, you know, get in the van, drive to Milwaukee, wherever we're going. Load in all of our gear ourselves, you know, maybe sound check if we're lucky, play a show to like a dingy ass club and then we'd go back as soon as we got off stage. You know, usually somebody would pack up my amp for me or whatever, because I'd go straight back to the merch table and like be on and have to be like, hey, did you see us play? We were the band right before this. You got to buy this CD, you know, $10. You know what, just like literally taking every opportunity to try to talk to every person in that crowd just to try to like get them to like buy in and like buy a CD or buy a t-shirt so that we could like make it to the next city, you know. And a lot of times we would be like, hey, oh, this girl seems cool, or these guys are awesome. Like, they asked, like, we'd stay at people's houses and crash on people's couches a lot and stuff, you know. Or even like, yeah, we'll go, a couple of us would sleep in their place. A couple of us would sleep in the van, but then we'd all at least get a shower in the morning, you know, before we had to drive, you know, 6 hours or something to our next gig, driving ourselves, all arguing like, wait, are we going to get Chipotle? Or are we going to get McDonald's? Okay, well, we got it. We can only stop once because we're late. And, you know, and then getting to the show to load in. And then again, same thing every day. So you'd think that was difficult. Then we get signed and Hollywood is pushing this hate to the radio. So now at that time, I want to say we were probably on a bus because we had to be, we couldn't drive during the days because we had to do promo during the days. So then it's like, we'd have a bus. So we'd play the show and then we'd sleep while the bus driver drives. But then when we woke up at, you know, 10 in the morning, we would have to like right away pretty much meet the radio guys would pick us up, and we'd have to go to, you know, one or two radio stations and do like an interview on the radio. And that was our first taste of that. And we'd have to play Hate acoustic, which is probably one of the highest songs in my register that I've ever written. And it was there's some terrible performances out there at, like, you know, like I said, 9:10 a.m. Like, I'm trying to sing this song for the fifth day in a row of doing this stuff, you know? So yeah, it was pretty rough. But I mean, dude, we're on top of the world. This is the dream. Like I said, it's awesome. And the song's climbing and doing well. And so then that's, you know, a little taste of it. But then Delilah time, yeah, instead of one or two radio stations, it was four or five. So you're driving all day. There's no time to do the bus because you have to fly to the next show. So we're getting on red eye flights after, you know, going to four radio stations, playing acoustic at every single one of them, having to be funny or, you know, on and, you know, likable. And then we go to the venue for the you know, the backstage meet and greet, and then the sound check party. And then we'd get maybe an hour to just like eat some food and like lay in the couch or lay on the chair and close our eyes for a second, go play the actual show, you know, and then do the after show meet and greet, and then literally go to the airport, fly, sleep on the plane, land, and straight from the airport, do the exact same thing for like 3 or 4 months, you know?
Wow.
And yeah, so then we ended up by the end of that, you know, luckily through this time, I'm always writing. So we had a lot of, like, we had 1, 2, 3, 4 was already written, you know, by the time it was ready to record the next album. Once we were over the cycle with Delilah and all that stuff, doing all the TV shows, like I said, TRL, we were on a show called Greek, we were on iCarly, you know, we did a ton of really, really amazing stuff. Then our next album, we recorded a lot of it in a house in Malibu. And that was like finally time for us all to like relax for a second, enjoy what had just happened.
Right.
We had like, I don't know, 2 months to record a record.
Oh, wow.
And we did, I think for about the first 5 weeks, we basically like just kind of partied and chilled in Malibu. And then I think the whole record was basically recorded in like 3 weeks.
Wow.
Yeah.
You obviously need that recharge time. Like, we just spread ourselves as thin as possible.
Totally.
I think a lot of folks go, oh, you know, rock stars, pop stars flying around. And it's like, no, the reason we're flying is because we're literally not budgeting time to sleep.
Right.
Because we're expected to do so many additional things. It's not quite as luxurious as people are assuming when it's, oh, we're taking a flight to XYZ town.
Right. Exactly. Yeah. Which, I mean, even I never thought of, you know, I wouldn't have known that had I not gone through it.
How did that then influence your writing process going forward? You go through all of this stuff, you see the power of a radio hit, and then you also see what it takes.
Sure. A lot of that next album was actually written on planes.
Mm.
You know, I'd be sitting there and, you know, not even a guitar or anything. I'd just come up with some lyrical ideas or just, you know, and, you know, either write them down or like make little voice memos on my phone, like super, you know, over the of the airplane, you know.
Yeah.
See, a lot of that next album was written on planes. I actually still write a lot on it because we still fly around a bunch. So not as crazy and hectic as back then, of course, but I still, I'll write because a plane is honestly, it's like sometimes that is the only time, you know. Now, instead of being a huge pop star in demand, I'm, you know, still a playing shows with the T's and making music with the T's and all this other stuff and running a record label and producing all these other artists. But dad is my real full-time job. And that's the coolest. So
right on.
Sometimes the only time you get to just kind of be alone with your, in your own mind for a second.
For sure.
And a lot of times you need that space, at least even just like not physical, but mental, you know, you need that mental space to be creative or to, you know, to kind of plug into that, you know, that inspiration or that creativity or whatever.
I'd love to dive into like the record label side now, because you got to see when everything gels, what can happen. And what inspired you then to found your own record label and move towards owning the business side as well?
Sure. Yeah. I mean, honestly, I don't like business. And so I think that the way I run the label is very artist driven. It's like, I'm much more concerned with just putting out just really great things, things that I love, things that I stand by and believe in. So yeah, that was basically the reasoning, not because like, oh man, I always wanted to have a business and own a record label, but more like, man, I just want to like help develop and help launch people that I think are great. You know, it's like when I see, I find an artist that I think is great, it's like, I just want to like prove to the world that they are, or like show the world. And, you know, just like with Play My Teeth starting out, it's like, man, I believed in myself and I believed in us. So it was like, there was nothing I wouldn't do to like get out there and just try to get in front of as many people as possible. And so that's kind of the, you know, the mission statement of the label is just to like find music that I believe in and just try to get as many ears and eyes on it as possible.
For sure. Oh, I love that. And you mentioned it, the crux of it is finding acts that you love. And I guess when you go to start it, what were you looking for in particular? I know you mentioned your own influences and creative endeavors. I guess when you do found that, did you have certain genres or anything in mind? Like, you know what, it's just going to be whatever I find that I think really stands out.
Yeah, honestly, so that the group Fairview that I have signed, they were kind of the reason, like, you know, always in the back of my mind, like, oh man, I should do a label, or, you know, because I always would like produce artists and like work with other artists and stuff. But Fairview is kind of the reasoning behind, like, okay, this is it. Like, these guys are so good and these songs we're doing are great. Like now is the time. You know, so it was always kind of like a pipe dream or back of my mind kind of a thing, but it was Fairview that made it like urgent. And then, yeah, and TLB was kind of happening right around the same time. And so it just was like that perfect time where it was like, man, I've got these projects that are just really good. It's time.
That's very cool. And so I guess that was 2017. And with like the evolving music landscape, what I find fascinating is that really you honed in on stuff you loved, especially for Million Miler and such. You've got the tape. What advice would you give to artists out there, or maybe even some of your own, on navigating? Because it's become so digital. A lot of it's a volume game, but it really seems you're honing in on like the heart of the music and showing that. So I guess, what approach are you taking to really see that to fruition? Because I love that when you said tape, I was like, wow, that's like perfectly on brand as far as like us talking about the sonic spectrum you're exploring.
Totally. Yeah. And I think that's the key. It's like, honestly, there's no freaking crystal ball, or there's no surefire. You know, I've seen friends like, you know, get on plenty. I mean, even with the T's, it's like, we were kind of the last band to get signed to a major out of all of our friends and stuff. And they all kind of shot past us and then just slowly just kind of faded out away, you know? And it's like getting onto a label means nothing.
Yeah, it's like step 5.
Yeah, exactly. I mean, no, it's more like step 20, you know? It's like, it's really all a label can do for you is like add some, you know, coal to the fire that you're already to the train engine that you're already got in motion. Literally, that's all a label can do. That's why for me with Humans Were Here, even though it is a label, it's I think more of the creative side and the artistic side and the development side. You know, me writing and producing a lot of the stuff that we're putting out, helping the artists, you know, improve their live show, all things like that. But in reality, your career is your own, you know, and no label, like I said, has that magic formula to like make it connect or make it blow up. Like, you can put a bunch of money in something and nobody gives a shit still, you know? So I would say my advice that I always, you know, whether it's my artists or other artists out there, you just have to just do it, you know, like, you got to figure out a way to connect with your fans. You've got to do as much as you can. You've got to say yes. You've got to, you know, if there's an opportunity that happens, go for it, you know, like, and just, yeah, I don't know. For me, it's like when I was in Plain White Tees early days, it was kind of like, that's all I thought about. You know, it was like throughout my whole day, it was like, okay, I need to write more songs. I need to finish that one idea I have. Oh, there's a show downtown. I need to go make flyers for our next show and go stand outside in the middle of January and make sure everybody that leaves that place gets a flyer and knows about Plain White Tees, sees that name, Plain White Tees. Mm-hmm. You know, you've got to really live and breathe it. Otherwise, it's really not going to happen. You know, if you don't believe it and if you're not putting 100% in it, I can do as much as I can to help you make a great product or play a great live show. But if you're not like 100% just devoted to it, then it still probably won't work out. You know, I don't know if that answers your question, but.
Totally. Obviously, you're extremely passionate about the creative space and you've got TLB and Million Mile. There's a lot coming up. So I guess before we kind of wrap things up, there's a lot of moving pieces here. So I guess what should people be looking out for?
Yeah, it's a very strange time to be launching all this stuff because normally, like I said, yeah, Million Miler, I dropped a full-length debut album this year. but I can't really go out and play shows or anything. You know, you don't, nobody wants to go to some, like a small club right now and see some artists that they, you know, it's like a, it's such a weird time because of the pandemic and stuff. Obviously Plain White Tees, we've been able to go play shows again, but there are all these big outdoor festivals and stuff where, you know, COVID, I guess, is not as big of a threat at these outdoor venues, which is great, you know? So yeah, it's a very strange time to be thinking about how to actually promote things. You know, like I mentioned, Million Miler's got a couple music videos coming out, because that's something where, okay, at least everybody's at home with their phones. They can watch a video, or they can, we can connect that way. Long story short, next year, I think there will definitely be some live shows happening with Million Miler, with TLB, with some of the other Humans Were Here artists, Fairview, Robot X. You got to check both of them out. They're incredible. Launching a new band from Chicago called One Life, who is, they were buddies of mine back in the day, one of my favorite artists ever. And they're writing and recording a record, and I'm going to be able to have the honor of putting it out, which is so cool because they're great friends of mine and like legitimately one of my favorite artists. So yeah, a lot coming out from the label side. Like I said, Million Miler and TLB both have some new music coming out very shortly. Since I can't play shows with those artists, really just keep freaking hammering new songs and stuff, you know, making sure if you're on the fence, or if you maybe haven't, a lot of people haven't heard of these artists yet because they're so new and underground. Mm-hmm. It's like, cool. The more we chip away at that, you know, we're going to eventually, somebody's going to discover it and say, oh my God, they've got 2 albums out. This is amazing. You know, kind of like us back in the day, I'm sure you as well. It's like, man, when I discovered a band and they had like, yeah, a couple albums that were already out on an indie label or something, it's like, you felt like you got this entire, you got to dive into this whole world that you didn't even know existed until a week ago, you know, and there's all of this wealth of music that you can just absorb. And then, yeah, like I said, Plain White Tees, we're playing shows. You know, we're getting ready to, we've got a lot of great songs written that we're kind of tweaking and ready to record. So there'll be brand new Plain White Tees music on the horizon, probably early, you know, 2022, hopefully January, February, there'll be some new Plain White Tees songs coming out.
Very cool.
So yeah. And all the, to find out all of this stuff, humanswerehere.com. That's kind of the hub where you can, if you want to buy a Million Miler vinyl or a TLB vinyl, or just a t-shirt or whatever, that's kind of the hub. And then I always post everything about all the projects I'm working on, including Plain White Tees, on my Instagram. That's kind of where I live, which is at Higgy Pop, like Tom Higginson. Higgy Pop, a sound guy, gave me that nickname about, I don't know, 10 years ago, and it stuck.
Right on. That's awesome. For kicks and such, I'd love to hear, you know, post-pandemic, when we're kind of through the thick of it, what are those ideal venues or tours look like for you? Because obviously you've got so many different sonic spectrums you're playing with. I'm just curious to kind of hear your thoughts of how you visualize those manifesting differently.
Yeah, I mean, so TLB, in the past, we have played shows because we've been a band for a little bit. We're like the Ramones, but like I'm the drummer. And so because I'm so used to being a front man, I'm always like, if ever there's like a break in a song, I'm like standing up and like shouting along and stuff. Like I try to get as many people just naturally, I think, like I said, because of that frontman vibe, I want to like have more of a, you know, fun presentation of a show. And you know, what's funny too, is like we've played even on big stages, like a House of Blues stage or something. We try to set up, you know, we're all like 5 feet from each other. Even if we've got like a 30-foot stage, we'll all be like right in the center, like within, you know, close, kind of like, you know, in all those pictures of like the bands like the Ramones or the Clash or something. It's like, you know, you can fit the whole band in one shot easily because they're all just tight, and that adds to the energy of it and the vibe. Small ass clubs. I mean, of course, it would be fun to do a bigger tour opening up for like, you know, a band like Green Day or something. I mean, but you know, that's step by step, one step at a time. And then yeah, Million Miler, honestly, kind of the same vibe. You know, there's a lot of great bands. Like, I don't know if you've heard of The Midnight. They're great, great synth wave, synth pop band who's doing really great with touring and stuff. That would be a really fun band to kind of try to partner up with for some stuff. But yeah, just like the same thing. I mean, all you need is a loud ass PA and some kind of fun lights for Million Miler. Give it like a little bit of a neon vibe, and then, you know, just kind of dance, jump around, and just get the crowd going.
That's awesome. Well, to wrap things up here, I've got a rapid fire section for you based on the conversation we've been having. So just off the cuff here, hearkening back to your dad's influences, Halloween or the Scorpions?
Oh, man. Okay, so here's the problem. So Halloween has one phenomenal album, Keeper of the Seven Keys, Part 2. If you go listen to that album, holy shit, start to finish, it's incredible. And for some reason, anything else I've listened to them, really, I've been like, this isn't that great. But that one album, they just like, it was perfect. So I guess I'd have to go Scorpions just because they're a little bit more consistent and more legendary, you know?
Right on. The Monkees or Beach Boys?
Well, I've got to go Beach Boys. Even though the Monkees started it all for me, the Beach Boys were kind of the real deal. You know, the Monkees were kind of like a little bit of a novelty, even though they have beautiful songs. God, Daydream Believer is such a beautiful song. But yeah, Beach Boys, I mean, you can't really mess with them.
Right. Smoking Popes or Ramones?
Oh, come on, dude. That's a tough one. I mean, God, the Smoking Popes were literally like one of the biggest early influences of Plain White Tees. They actually came because they're from Chicago. I actually, you know, like I was saying, I would go to shows and pass out flyers. I gave Josh, the singer of the Smoking Popes, a flyer at one of their shows, and they actually came to see us in some shitty church basement in a suburb of Chicago. And it was like, dude, you guys are the cool, like who does that? You know, that was just such a monumental moment for us as just some crappy local band, you know? But without the Ramones, there wouldn't be a Smoking Popes, you know, there certainly wouldn't be TLB without the Ramones. So I don't know. I gotta pass on that one. That's both those bands are freaking so amazing and so important.
For sure. Vinyl or tape?
Vinyl, you know, tape does not sound as good, but yeah, tape is just fun. To me, it's fun to listen to things like even my own music. It's like, it always, like, even if you're freaking, even on Spotify, it sounds different in the car than it does on your headphones, or it does on the Bluetooth player in my bathroom or whatever. You know, it's fun to like listen to things just on different speakers. And it's the same thing with the format. It's like, you have the same album, you put it on vinyl, you're going to hear it in a slightly different way than you would on an MP3. And tape is probably, like I said, kind of the shittiest quality, but sometimes that's fun to just hear it in that format, you know? And I've got this little boombox that I like carry around. I'll bring outside with me. I'll sit outside on my like little back porch with a, you know, rocking chair and just play some tapes on the boombox. And it's just such a cool, it makes you feel like I'm a kid again in the 80s, and like, I don't know, I'm like cleaning my room and I've got my boombox going. I don't know.
Yeah, right on. So I guess ultimately to wrap things up, why do you work in music?
I mean, why the hell not? You know, I love music. And I think, yeah, it was when I was like 15 or 16, it was actually that album Jagged Little Pill by Alanis Morissette. That was a pivotal album for me, because it came out as I was kind of starting to write songs, right? And like learn how to play guitar and learn, you know, kind of this budding interest in craft that I was creating. That album at the time was just so raw and so like unlike anything that I'd heard before. And the real focus of that album was the songwriting. I've never heard anybody say those things that she said. It was just so vulnerable and like I keep saying raw, but it really was. And so that was the album that made me think, wow, like, I want to do that. Like, I want to write songs that make people feel, because it made me feel, that made me connect to this thing on a bigger level. And so that's really the album that made me want to do it. And kind of honestly, from that point on, there was no other, you know, not even a thought to really do anything else.
Yeah. No, I love that. And then conversely, especially as you've got these projects that are taken off in the label, what do you hope people get out of working with you in the music realm?
That's hilarious because the last time I was working with Fairview, we were writing a song and we had about a 30-minute argument about whether the word should be but or in between the verse.
Yeah.
So I don't want, I mean, I can be a stickler for things. Ultimately, I want to give the artist power and to give the artist a sense of importance, you know, I can give that to, and I guess empower the artist with that sense, because that's the most important thing. It's like, you've got to live and breathe, like I said, your art and your, so I would impart that on them. So yeah, I would hope that for people working with me, I can be, you know, I'm going to put up my dukes and fight for what I think is, believe is right for the songs. But then again, I think because I have had hits, because I have, you know, I am a proven songwriter and I've gone through pretty much everything in the music business that you can go through. I feel like, I hope my artists have a trust in me that maybe if that, you know, maybe to go with my gut and to let me help, you know, maybe they can, maybe they don't make some of the mistakes that we made or don't have to go through some of the same things. I'm just glad that I get to be in a position where I can work with artists and can just continue to do music in all of these different facets deep down. That's the heart of it all, is just, I love music. So the fact that I get to do it and create it and perform it and produce it and release it, you know, all angles is definitely the dream. So living the dream. What can I say?
With hindsight being 2020, you go back to that basement playing where the smoking Pope show up. What do you tell yourself?
I mean, honestly, I wouldn't even say anything to myself. It's like, maybe write more songs like Hey There, Delilah. I should have. I'm still telling myself that, because we always, like, you know, it's that duality of me. You know, I don't want to just kind of, you know, take the same road that led to success. I want to, like, no, I got to push myself. I got to push my audience. I got to, like, never do the same thing twice. Mm-hmm. So like I said, there's not even regrets. It's just,
right.
It's I'm very happy with all the success and all the failures that we've had, you know, through the years. There's no place I'd rather be besides, like, right here, you know.
Love that.
I wouldn't change a thing. Yeah.
Always love to hear that, and genuinely appreciate you taking the time. It was wonderful to virtually meet you. And before I let you go, want to give one more shout out to where folks can find your stuff?
Yeah, sure. So if you're looking to follow me, which is probably the best spot because I'm always posting all these projects I'm working on, I'll post about them on Instagram. @HiggyPop is my Instagram. And again, if you want to actually look into some of the artists on Humans Were Here, Fairview, Million Miler, Robot X, TLB, soon the best band in the world, One Life, you can go to humanswerehere.com, pick up a vinyl, pick up a t-shirt. Of course, plainwhitetees.com for tour dates, see what's going on with us. And yeah, you'll find that, you can find all the other Instagram. If you guys followed everybody on Instagram, that would be amazing. Million Miler, Humans Were Here, TLB. Because yeah, there's a lot of really fun stuff happening now and in the very near future. So be following and be watching, I guess.
Awesome. Well, I will be sure to shout all those out as this episode goes live. Again, genuinely appreciate you taking the time.
Awesome. Yeah. Thank you, man. This was super fun. And yeah, just easy going conversation. Very cool.
Well, I'm thrilled you had a good time. The sentiment is mutual. And cheers. Believe it or not, that brings us to the close of season 4 of Made for Music. For those of you that have been along for the ride, thank you so much. And if you dig what you hear, please rate and subscribe to Made for Music on Apple Podcasts, Spotify, wherever you get your podcasts from. Seriously, those of you that are leaving reviews and comments, genuinely appreciate that. That goes a long way. And we're working on some really cool stuff for season 5, so be sure to follow along. Have a lot of exciting guests coming up the pipe and some potential changes. So that's your little teaser. Stay tuned. Be sure to follow Tom at Higgy Pop, The Plain White Tees, humanswerehere.com. And I'll see you next time.